Alabama in the 1960s was at the heart of the civil rights movement, the bus boycotts, the marches, the sit-ins, snarling dogs, gushing fire hoses. Many of that era's iconic moments happened in Alabama. Under the leadership of Whitney Young, the National Urban League, which is one of our country's oldest civil rights organizations, joined the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and others in the fight to end Jim Crow segregation in the Deep South. Our guests today were dispatched by Mr. Young to open an Urban League office in Birmingham, Alabama, and they join us to share their memories. On the phone from Chicago, Clarence Wood. He's the former founding director of the Birmingham Urban League, and most recently was executive director of the Jane Addams Hull House. And with me in the studio is Willard Walker, who is Clarence's deputy director in Birmingham. Mr. Walker's gone on to have a long career in public service and government here in Michigan. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
To remind our listeners, please, each of you, what the Urban League's main mission was in Alabama in the mid-1960s. Clarence Wood?
Our main mission was to make sure that the laws that had been passed, the new achievements growing out of the civil rights movement, were made real to the people who had been, until that time, discriminated against and segregated. And so we went in to assure that employment was made possible, that people were able to have access to those facilities that in the past they had not had access to, from bathrooms to water fountains to front doors. So that was what we were sent to do, was to actualize the successes of the civil rights movement.
Willard Walker, how did you experience that?
When we got there, we had a snapshot of what the city was like. Clarence is from Birmingham, and I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, so we knew what we were up against. And we also knew that we had to get a staff that was well prepared to go out in that community and do the work that Clarence just described. And we did focus on employment, but we also focused on community organizing. We focused on integrating public facilities, as Clarence says. And we were, I believe, a Alabama-wide Urban League. So we weren't just Birmingham, but we could work all over the state to do this work. And the way we looked at it was one day at a time. We had to take it one day at a time. We had to identify what strategies we wanted to use. We had to communicate with each other all the time. We got to know each other very well.
Clarence Wood, there must have been days you took it 1 hour at a time, I imagine.
Well, of course. We didn't know what we were going to encounter every morning when we got up. There were those people who did not want us in the town. There were business leaders who would have preferred that we not come and challenge them and the practices of their businesses to that time, particularly retail store owners, restaurants, and major corporations from U.S. Steel to ACIPCO to the Stockholm plants that were there. Churches were not anxious to see us come. It could have meant that we would sit in the pew at the church that was downtown that had never had a black in it, rather than going to what, until that time, had been the church of the same denomination, but for the black community. And so there were numbers of people who did not necessarily want us there or expect us to proceed with the challenge that we had been given to do the kind of work that we were asked to do.
Willard, you mentioned that you saw the Birmingham office as a statewide kind of thing. Was there any less resistance in the city compared to the rural areas?
I think the city was more prepared to strategize against us than any of the rural areas. The rural areas were just a little bit, in my view, more dangerous simply because the people were feeling really, really, really threatened in the rural areas, even around Birmingham, but certainly in South and North Alabama. They hadn't seen, had never been threatened by black people. And to hear about this organization and then to see, in most cases, just Clarence and myself coming into places, speaking to groups of people at rallies, visiting schools, visiting bombed out churches and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. they were really, really, really sort of thrown off. And so the dangers were outside. I think the people in Birmingham, because they've been at it for a long, long time, they got a little bit less, if I can say, offensive.
Clarence Wood, how did you become aware of Willard?
Oh, well, I had gone to college with a great group of folk who had all moved to Chicago. And when we arrived in Chicago, we met Willard and a group of others who all of us in one way or another began to work together. Willard and myself became fast friends. I had been working at the Department of Public Welfare in Chicago, and I was the first African-American to go to work for the Jewish community centers on the south side of Chicago.
Hmm.
And I got Willard involved in my work there, so I'd known him professionally. And I needed someone who was willing to take the risks with me to go to Alabama, and I knew he had some reasons that he might be interested in going. So we had become friends. We had talked often about the South and our strong feelings and the draw that we had always about going back. We went every Christmas and on special holidays together. He was an easy target. I knew he wanted a little bit more money than he was making teaching school. I knew he had family in Birmingham. And so he was, as I said, an easy target, ready to go. I didn't want to tell him too much of what we were going for because it might have meant that he would not be willing to take some of the risks. Let me make one point on what Willard had said earlier. And what most people don't understand about the civil rights movement in the 60s period, and that was the laws were put on the books. We had new housing laws and new voting laws, and we had laws that let us sit differently on buses. Testing those laws was really critical at the time, particularly in the South. People were still afraid. They remembered the dogs. They remembered the Billy Clubs. They remembered Bull Connor. They remembered Lester Maddox. And I don't know that Willard and myself really thought about it, but we had been out of the South long enough to have enjoyed some of the freedoms that were available to us, eating in restaurants and going to places that we would not have been able to do had we been in the South. And so going back for us meant that we were usually doing the things that had become normal to us in Chicago. And people would see us able and willing to do those things. And so we were changing behavior in accordance with laws, but being examples to the people that these things could be done. And Willard can tell you the story. I remember the day we went into a department store and tried on a hat and asked to put on some shoes. It was long after the law had been passed that we had access to that, but that the salespeople still did not believe we had the right to do it. And so our behavior made a difference in the lives of those people that we worked with and for in the Birmingham Urban League.
How much resistance did you face in situations like that, Willard?
Well, we faced different resistance depending on what business we were in.
Uh-huh.
There, it was a matter of trying on a hat and saying, you do sell a lot of hats to black people here, and we know this because we did the research. And we also know you've got a lot of black people working here who are seamstresses and who help prepare the clothes, and so we can look at that. On the other hand, when we went to the steel mills, it was a different environment. And particularly when we talked to union guys, they had virtually a dual union system at U.S. Steel at that time, and most people don't believe that. I came here to go to the School of Labor and Industrial Relations, and I don't believe my professors believe that now. But the fact is they did, and we threatened that. We threatened it by showing up. We threatened it by asking questions about power and authority in the unions and what we thought it should be and what it really was. And so we had different levels of resistance, if you will, depending on the companies or the industry that we were talking about at the time. Clarence mentioned restaurants, huge businesses in the South, and they had some funny practices also. When we first went to New Orleans for a national convention, the practice of white waitresses watching black waiters and waitresses serve the table and then clean the table, and then white waitresses coming up or waiters coming up to get the tip. We found that to be quite different and actually sort of said to the restaurant, we're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't run us out of town, but it was just a different behavior. And the people who that affected were really the people who worked in that industry, okay? And so it was different. And different challenges depending on where you were and what industry you went to.
Clarence Wood, what were the most alarming circumstances you ever found yourself in?
Oh, there were numbers. Driving from Birmingham to Montgomery, knowing that as we went under overpasses, there were people with guns having brick thrown down at your car as you passed under. And people would say, well, how did they know you were coming? Well, it was easy. You know, people would get your schedule, they knew where you were going, and they wanted to threaten you. And so those were difficult moments that way. Before Willard came to town, and I'll never forgive him for this, I went about 3 months before Willard did to Birmingham. As the executive director, I went to get the budget and to do all of the things that I had been assigned to do with the expectation that Willard would come at the end of the school year. I remember the day I pulled up in front of the office to get out of my car, and I remember the day someone put a gun to my head and said, you're not wanted here, you ought to leave town. And so I was threatened. I remember the phone calls that came to my house, and Willard's family reported numbers of phone calls that came to his house threatening our families and threatening us. My mother was a school teacher in Birmingham, and I remember my mother calling me one day and saying Hank had notified her that if her son continued to do some of the things that he was doing, she might find it difficult to continue with that bank and continue with her mortgage. And so there were threats all of the time. What we understood, though, was that there were people who we could go to who could understand the fear that we had and would help us by making the appropriate phone calls. And we had good board members who could do that. We had people who knew the way through the system to make those contacts.
You had to network. You were the first networkers.
Well, networkers, we were brokers in numbers of ways between the differences of thought in the community to advance a different kind of thinking. The Birmingham newspapers, special columns that were written for blacks, by blacks. When we went to the newspaper to say, it doesn't seem logical to continue two different pages of weddings every week, a page for blacks who were getting married, a page for whites who were getting married. Willard will remember the head of the newspaper, who had been a Klansman for a very long time, saying to us that he did not agree with what we were doing, and that in numbers of ways he was going to work to get us put out of the city. I remember our first meeting, and Willard is better at this one than I am, with the governor of Alabama, Governor Brewer, who read the Bible to Willard about why he should not expect to be equal.
Willard Walker, you want to add anything to that? Your recollection is as vivid as Clarence's.
Never has been. But the fact is that we were put under a certain amount of pressure every day. And when we went to talk to the governor in the case that Clarence is speaking of, they kept us waiting a long time, and that was fine. We didn't have anything else to do. But we got the audience, which was not typical, and the governor did take some time to tell us boys that if we didn't like what was going on in Alabama, he'd be pleased, you know, if we just go back to where we came from, and that was his story to us.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Let's move to your recollections of Whitney Young. It was Mr. Young that dispatched both of you to open the office in Birmingham, Alabama. Clarence, can you tell us about Whitney Young, please?
Well, I had known Miss Young a bit before I went to Birmingham. He had gone to college with a cousin of mine at Kentucky State. I had been working for the Urban League about 2 years before I went to Birmingham, in Chicago, running a program of the Urban Leagues in education, integrating schools. Ms. Young had gone to the Urban League in 1961 after being the dean of a school of social work in Atlanta. He hired me 3 years, 4 years after he became the executive director of the Urban League. I knew him, but I'd known a number of people like Mr. Young who were born into middle-class black families whose parents had been in education, who had been reared to take advantage of every opportunity in education to ready themselves for full participation in society. I admired him. He was a man of great stature, a man who made his point without having to be either a bully or a confronter of any kind. I respected him. I understood that at the time he took the helm of the Urban League was going through some moments of change. It was just beginning to become an agency involved in the heightened civil rights movement, working in community organization. In fact, Mr. Young brought a program to the Urban League called the New Thrust, which was a parallel experience in the Urban League, that of working with companies to get jobs and to get education, a parallel experience that of working with communities to organize communities and to train communities as to how to take advantage of the new laws and the new powers that were available to them. He was a great man. He's a great man.
We're running out of time here. Willard Walker, in just a few words, describe your recollection of Whitney Young.
Very prepared, professional, like a lot of men in my hometown also, black men, but really great character, and he knew what he was doing. He really knew what he was doing.
Well, Clarence Wood and Willard Walker were the founding directors of the Birmingham Urban League in the 1960s. Thank you both very much for sharing your memories with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can hear more of Mr. Walker's story tomorrow night as he'll take part in a panel discussion at WKAR's community cinema screening of Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights, the newest documentary from PBS's Independent Lens. The event is at 7 p.m. at the Communication Arts and Sciences Media Auditorium here at 404 Wilson Road on the MSU campus. The documentary airs on WKAR-TV Monday, February 18th at 10 p.m.